Welcome to In Focus. It is Wednesday, and that means it is time for our weekly visit from Dr. Lena Lee, Medical Officer of Health with the Leeds, Granville, and Lanark District Health Unit. Dr. Lee, welcome back to Lake 88.
Always a pleasure to be here.
And also joining us today, we've got Senior Public Health Inspector Sarah Burris. Sarah, thank you for being here.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
We will be speaking with you in a moment, Sarah. As we do every week, we will start with Dr. Lee and get a look at the numbers that have come out just yesterday. The surveillance report came out, and, you know, I'm no doctor, Lena, but it looked pretty good.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe you're getting there, Bob, after all these weeks between me and Dr. Stewart before. But you're absolutely right. In terms of COVID-19, our numbers are looking actually continuing to be low and stable. And so we continue to have limited detection of COVID-19 based on the testing that we're doing, which is reassuring. However, I do want to point out as well that in our weekly surveillance updates, we do have updates about the respiratory ER visits, and those would be, a combination of any number of respiratory viruses, COVID-19, flu, RSV, other respiratory viruses that cause the flu. And those are definitely continuing to be high and still trending. It's hard to say. The past week's data looks like it's coming down, but is it just a fluke? I would say, what I could say with a bit more confidence is that the numbers are rising at a rate that is not as rapid as it once was, which is hopefully a good sign. What we are seeing in our region, it's not in our data dashboard, but I'm getting reports from other sources that what we're seeing is primarily flu in our region. And we do have flu all across Ontario as one of the primary respiratory viruses that's transmitting. In Eastern Ontario, we actually have more flu as a percentage of our positive respiratory cases compared to other parts of Ontario. And LGL is certainly in keeping with that as well. I think our flu percent positivity rates are in the 20-something percent, which is quite high.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to tell you, it hangs on. Everyone who I know who has had this, and I had something 3 weeks ago, and I'm still coughing. You might be able to hear it in my voice. That's exactly where it is right now. It really does hang on for a while, doesn't it, doctor?
Yeah. So depending on what it was, some of them, especially changes to your voice or sometimes a cough, that can take some time. And that's because the viruses do have a preference for the cells in the back of your throat. That's actually why we do the swabbing in the back of one's throat or in the back of one's nose, because that's where these respiratory viruses really like to hang out. And then those cells do get damaged, and then those cells have to recover, and you get new cells, and that, that takes time for your body to do. So it can be weeks for sure.
Yeah, and I can attest to it. I certainly can. Now, we've touched on this before, but you talk about people going to ERs and assessment centers when they're not well, or a child isn't and they want to bring them in. Let's go over this again. When should people be visiting those clinical assessment centers?
Yeah, so there are, I would say, three options for people in general for where to go, maybe four. So the assessment center is one. People's family doc or our primary care practitioner is another. And then, of course, people can also call Health Connect at 811. And that is a number that is staffed by nurses often, and they will give you information and help you triage your symptoms to know where to go. And then last of all is, of course, the ER. And so I'll go through some of these. In terms of where to go first, so I would say if If you have some questions and you're not super worried, or you're not sure how worried to be, then definitely try calling Health Connect at 811 or your primary care practitioner or your doctor's office first to see if they have any advice for you. Not everyone has a family doctor in our region, which is, I think, a different conversation. But for those who don't have a family doctor, then going to the assessment center is a really good option as well. And certainly, the assessment center, I just want to be really clear, isn't just for COVID-19. I know it started out for COVID-19, but for anyone with respiratory symptoms, the assessment center is a good place to go as well. And certainly, if you are also so other times to go to the assessment center is if you're getting worse or your symptoms are not improving and you feel like you need medical care, and you're not able to access your family doctor, or you don't have one. If you've been told by somebody, like your family doctor to go to the assessment center, and as well, as a reminder, those who are at high risk of getting very sick from COVID-19, oftentimes when you're sick at home with some sort of respiratory bug, you don't know what it is. If you are at higher risk of getting very sick from COVID-19, even if you don't know whether it's COVID-19 or something else, if you qualify for the COVID-19 antivirals, then definitely go to an assessment center as well because they will do a PCR test for you. And then if it is COVID-19, then you'll get those antiviral medications. It is important to get those medications within 5 days of when you become symptomatic. And so there's definitely, a bit of a time crunch. So it's important to recognize that and get assessed as soon as possible. And the assessment center will also, people who are sick with respiratory symptoms, they may get tested. And if they do, then oftentimes the test is for COVID-19, flu, and RSV, as well as other viruses that cause the common cold.
All right. Well, yeah, great information there for sure. And especially for people who are at higher risk, because that is, you just don't want to take any chances, though.
Absolutely. And especially when we know that there are options for treatment for COVID-19 in particular, oftentimes for respiratory viruses, as we all know, there isn't really any medications or treatments. And so having something for COVID-19, being eligible for it is important to throw all the treatment options that we've got.
Absolutely. So we're now well under 20 days until the big day, of course. I'm talking about Christmas, and holiday gatherings will be taking place as well. And Sarah, we're going to be talking to you about some of that in just a couple of minutes. But before we do, Dr. Lee, it is very important that we remind people that if you are gathering, take some precautions, but really, there are certain people who need to be a little bit more careful. We've already seen what can happen if they're not. And it really, a lot of people just seem to be having this feeling that they're sort of out of COVID-19. That's not the case. We still need to take some precautions when we get together over the holidays.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really have to say, it's not just COVID-19, it's also the flu. The
Yeah.
flu can cause serious illness as well. And my big message here is actually, to me, what's most important is please stay home if you're feeling unwell, if you're feeling sick. I know that it's actually really frustrating if, the day before or the day of a party or a gathering that you've been really looking forward to, if you feel unwell or you start to get sick, if you do get sick, please stay at home. That's really important to help protect the people who are also there going to that party or gathering. So please consider sort of everyone who's there when you think about whether you have symptoms and what to do next. The other thing is think about who you'll be there with at this event. and where the event is, and then take some precautions to protect yourself. So you know, if it's a gathering with a lot of people, maybe you'll feel more comfortable wearing a mask. If you're the one who's planning the event, you can consider whether it makes sense to have the event virtually. And then also the ventilation system, or the degree of ventilation in the room that you're going to, and choosing locations with good ventilation, opening windows if that's possible. And then lastly, of course, for people going to events in person, just bringing things, even if you don't initially think that you'll need it. So bringing a mask in case that's something that you end up wearing. Definitely bring some hand sanitizer would be important. Using hand sanitizer frequently, doing the hand washing before you eat, before you touch your face. And then all of that will help with decreasing risk of transmission of any number of respiratory viruses for both yourself and other people at the party.
Couple of key points that you made in there that I just like to bring up. Like you said, if you feel like you're starting to get sick, you know, if people say, you know what, I kind of feel something coming on, that doesn't mean that you're not infectious. I mean, if you start to feel just a little teeny tiny bit sick, then don't go, because you can still spread the virus at that point, right?
Absolutely. And Bob, you say, I think you've come a long way, I'm sure, in the past couple of years. Yeah, absolutely. That's something that I think sometimes people aren't aware of, which is that if you're not feeling well, it's not at the peak of illness that you might be the most infectious. Certainly for COVID-19, as an example, people are most infectious up to 24 hours before they start becoming symptomatic. And that's a good example of how viruses can affect you and be infectious even though your body is not necessarily giving you the signals you might expect.
You mentioned virtually. You can do the gathering virtually, or you can have these people who can't be there sort of dip in virtually. And last year, I was sick and had to miss the family gathering on my wife's side of the family. So she went and ended up using her phone for a little bit, just having, you know, sort of a pocket Bob for a little bit to go and say hi to people and that type of thing, as she was masked up, and so was my grandson. So, you know, we took those precautions there. There's other ways that you can take part. It's not the same. It really isn't, but it's a way to take part and to be safe.
Absolutely. And that's so important for yourself, for other people. And you know, this being the holiday season and the season of goodwill towards man, I think it's important as well to sort of be that embodiment of goodwill by not transmitting respiratory illness
It's
to
one
other
gift
people
you
at a
don't want
party.
to give, right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, Dr. Lee, I want to thank you so much. As always, you're welcome to hang in as we talk to Sarah as well. But we know that you're very busy, and often you have to go off to another meeting. So, from Dr. Bob to Dr. Lee, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure.
All
See you next
right.
week.
You bet. Dr. Lena Lee, Medical Officer of Health with our local health unit. And we're going to still talk about these holiday gatherings with Sarah Burris. Sarah, thank you so much for staying with us over the course of our conversation with Dr. Lee. And we got into some of the safety precautions that you need to take if you are going to be having these gatherings. But you wanted to talk to us about safety when it comes to the food that is involved. And this is, well, you're right up my rally. You're right up my alley. I got to tell you right there, this is something that's near and dear to my heart. So maybe we can just talk in broad strokes first. Why does preparing food safely matter?
Well, I think you touched on it there. Food is an integral part of a lot of gatherings. So if some of our simple steps aren't followed, slip-ups could result in you or your guests getting ill, and we really want to try and prevent that.
I know one thing that people try not, or you know, may not do as much as they should, is to separate food. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about the importance of that rule.
Yeah, separating foods will definitely prevent cross-contamination. So we look at raw and ready-to-eat foods that you might be making. Keeping those separate through the storage and preparation process is really important. Within the fridge, you want to try and keep the raw product on the bottom so that gravity doesn't, take those drips down onto the ready-to-eat foods if they are below. And our residential fridges often have crispers in the bottom. So if your meat can't be on the very bottom, it's really good to keep it on a tray. Keep things covered as well in case there are those wayward drips that might have some bacteria in some of the meat juices or things like that. Separating utensils and cutting boards is a really good tip as well to prevent cross-contamination. And covering all foods as your, what's it said, preparation and storage, really important.
Absolutely. And this is something that we've learned right from the get-go. I mean, we've known this for a long time too. It is so important that you keep things clean as you're preparing food.
Yes, hand washing is the single most important means of preventing the spread of infection. So we really promote that for prevention of foodborne illness as well as other illnesses. Washing and sanitizing your utensils as you go. We do recommend separate cutting boards, but if you have to use the same one, once again, you can sanitize it in between, or at least do the ready-to-eat stuff first and then the raw product second. Washing fruits and veggies is really important, cleaning as well. Some of those items, while they might not have as much protein, they can still have bacteria on them. And especially if you're going to be serving them ready to eat, really good to give them a thorough washing before you do so. And probe thermometers, we'll talk about that a little bit more later on, but definitely, it's another utensil, right, that you might be putting in multiple food products. So you want to sanitize it between uses. And a great way to do that is with alcohol swabs or a bleach water solution.
It's something that people learn about early on, amateur chefs, when they start to cook meat and so on in the kitchen in their early days, is about temperatures. It is so important, isn't it?
Yes, temperatures are, they vary based on the product. So we do have a really great resource on our website that will list the different safe cooking temperatures for each product. So if you're having turkey, a whole poultry, it's going to be 82 Celsius. If you have a mixture, it's going to be 74 Celsius or 165 Fahrenheit for those that prefer Fahrenheit. And everything, some of our seafoods or hams might have a slightly lower cooking temperature as well. So the probe thermometer is really important there for measuring those internal temperatures. And it's also a really great way to preserve quality as well. So we don't want to have, for anyone that's familiar with the Clark Griswolds of the world and that famous movie scene, with the dried out turkey, it'll prevent that as well. If you use a probe thermometer, you won't dry things out.
Absolutely. And you just mentioned turkey there as well. One of the things too, when you do check the thermometer, or you do check the temperature of whatever's in the oven, you're releasing that beautiful odor that just gets your guests so excited to eat. There's no doubt about it. But when it comes to cooking the turkey, you suggest that you do not cook it at a low temperature over a longer period of time.
No, so that can allow for bacteria to kind of thrive in what we call the danger zone. So, cooking things at a higher temperature faster is safer, but once again, that quality element comes in. So, you don't want to dry it out, but you do want to use a higher temperature in a shorter time if possible.
Let's talk turkey a bit, because it's not often that people will be cooking turkeys throughout the year. They're generally maybe two times a year that they get a turkey out, unless you're a ham person at Thanksgiving. But nonetheless, there's certain things that you need to be reminded, especially if it's, been a long time since you've done it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thawing is probably one of the things that people need to remember most, that a large turkey is going to take a really long time to thaw. And we absolutely recommend doing that in the fridge in advance. Under cold running water can be used as another solution, but in the fridge, you're going to ensure that the outside of the bird never gets too warm before the inside is fully thawed. And if it's not fully thawed, it's also going to cook unevenly and take a really long time in the oven. So fully thawing it in the fridge is absolutely the best way to go. Once again, you can refer to our, we've got the great resource on our website for the temperatures that you would need for the different products, turkey being 82 Celsius. We do, there's the age-old debate, stuffing inside or outside the bird. The food safety risk with that when you cook stuffing inside the bird is that it's hard to make sure all the stuffing gets to 82 Celsius, because it is such a, there's such variability in the size and texture. So we do recommend cooking stuffing outside the bird. Once you have it cooked, cooled, half eaten, and you've got some leftovers, really important with turkey to take it off the bone and make sure you separate it into smaller quantities so it chills faster in the fridge for those delicious leftovers.
So maybe you could describe for us the rule around keeping things chilled.
Yeah, absolutely. Temperature is really important for food safety, so keeping things chilled below 4 degrees Celsius is really important. All potentially hazardous foods, things that can grow harmful bacteria, so proteins, anything like that. If you're keeping things out on a buffet for your guests, you want to keep them as cold as possible for as long as possible. You want to cool leftovers quickly by reducing container or portion size. Shallow pans work really well. Taking the turkey meat off the bone once again, chilling things in the freezer can help speed things and cool things more quickly as well.
All right. Now, what about reducing the spread of illness when gathering around food? I mean, this is something really it's just become part of our way of life.
To build on what Dr. Lee said earlier, definitely hand washing is really important for gatherings. Sharing utensils, if there are bacteria or viruses on your hand, you can spread those during a gathering as well. It is a time when we see slightly higher levels of norovirus as well. So cleaning and sanitizing utensils is good, and cleaning and sanitizing your hands before you use those utensils as well.
Excellent. Well, I got to tell you, I'm not even lying. My mouth is watering because I'm picturing all of this great holiday food and can't wait for the big holiday meal. Sarah, I want to thank you so much. If people would like to get a little bit more information, I have a feeling you know a website they can go to.
Yes, our website is healthunit.org, healthunit, all one word, .org, and there's an entire food safety section there with great resources.
Sarah, it's been a pleasure to speak with you. I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Sarah Burris, our guest here. She is a senior public health inspector with the Leeds Grenville and Lanark District Health Unit. And of course, our thanks to Dr. Lena Lee, Medical Officer of Health, who joined us earlier. I'm Bob Perreault. Have a wonderful afternoon.